Hello, everybody, and welcome to another live stream with us here at the Ozone Curious Project. I am Michael Hoffman, and I am thrilled to be back here after it's been about a month, Christina, right?
Yeah. A month, but we are back like every month for the rest of this year.
That's right. So we are excited to be here. Before we go, actually, Christina, welcome to the broadcast, and Nico, welcome back. It's been a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been way too long. But I'm back. It's just like Schwarzenegger.
Did you miss us? I'll be back.
Yeah, I always miss you guys. Always.
We miss you too. And for those of you that are just joining us for the first time, welcome to the Ocean Curious live stream. I'm Micah Hoffman, and I'm thrilled to be here. Scrolling along the bottom of the screen is information that you probably need for our live stream. Things like our website, our social, the link to our Discord, where you can come and join thousands of other people around the world and talk about the wonderful world of open source intelligence. Also, please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're on, YouTube, Twitch, LinkedIn. Make sure you follow us. Like Christina said, we're doing this once a month. We're going to give you all of the cool things that we found in that past month, and we'll talk with you about that. Also, if you are joining us live, as some of you do, give us a shout out on the platform you're on. I see Rashid out there. Say hi to us and tell us where you're from. We'd love to hear that.
Oh, yes, we do.
Yeah, so summer's over. It's time to get back into fall and the work that's coming.
I kind of like this season a lot. What? It feels very creative. Come on. And plus
really?
The rain. Yeah.
All right. I guess fall can be good.
Yes, Micah, it can be good. We have so many cool things lying ahead.
We do have a bunch of good things lying. Laying out ahead for us. Welcome, Matthew from Charlotte, and Satyam from India, Dieter. Good afternoon, everybody. And for those of you catching us on our podcast or on YouTube after the fact, welcome to you as well. What we're going to be doing in the next hour or so is we're going to be running through our list of favorite things that have happened in the world of open source intelligence, or OSINT, for the past month. Some of them are blog posts, some of them are videos, and some of them are tools and techniques that you might find useful in your hobby work or your actual OSINT curious or cybersecurity work in the fields of recon or open source intelligence. So without further ado, what do you say we get into this, Christina?
Let's go. Let's start.
All right.
So the first topic is a topic that I think is very dear to all of our hearts. It is about reviewing distressing content while conducting an open source intelligence investigation, and at the same time, protecting your mental health. Basically, how do you conduct a distressing investigation? How do you review violent content and at the same time protect your heart and soul from all the nasty things you're seeing about the world? Now, T. Baxter 90 goes his handle on Twitter. He wrote a pretty short and sweet blog post about his perspective and his experience while working in investigations that contain violent and distressing content. I don't want to spoil it too much. I think everybody should read it. But I'm just going to say that there are some pretty useful tips concerning what to do before an investigation. How do you prepare for it? How do you prepare about the content you're about to view during and after, which is generally a pretty nice framework to keep in mind. You have to be prepared. You have to be able to deal with it while it happens, and then you have to recover from it after the fact. Some of the tips include separating this type of work from anything that has to do with your home life. So clear and strict segregation between this type of work and anything else you have to do. Not exactly the type of home office job as well, I think, Nico. I don't know how much you agree with this because you're also involved in these types of investigations, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard to separate, well, at least working from home in this age where we have pandemics going on, where people are not allowed inside offices, for example, for a longer period of time. But it's those tips when you see in that blog, I think it's really good to at least make sure that you at least use a separated internet connection. Could be through a VPN, could be through a proxy. At least separate your private life from your investigative life. And that's, I think, a general tip for most OSINT cases that you want to do. You don't want to get things mixed up based upon algorithms and other stuff pointing towards your private life.
Nico, you wrote a blog like that for OSINT Curious as well. Did you have the chance to read this one and see if they noted some things that were different from what you had suggested?
Yeah, what I typically liked was what Christina already discussed, was what the preparations to take beforehand and also afterwards. Because when you look at my blog, it's more about tips during the investigation, or at least how to stay safe during the investigation. So that's vastly different from mine. So I think the two complement each other. Yes, yeah. Definitely worthwhile to check both out.
I think they complement each other. They also complement another live stream we had done last summer, 2021, with Nicole Beckwith. She also gave pretty good tips. I feel that these three resources go hand in hand. And Nico, you mentioned an OPSEC, operational security concern, separate your networks. This blog post also goes as far as saying separate the room you are conducting these investigations in with the rest of your life or your private life, for example, because you will create associations. And that's something we need to keep in mind as well. Or make sure that you review this content in the morning so that you can have the rest of the day to recover a little bit, to get out of this dark hole, this box of violence, and just, you know, look at the sky, see your family, see that there are other more beautiful aspects in life and not just what you have to review and work on, which is not always pleasant to see.
Yeah, and it can be challenging, right? Because if you're now, for example, investigating a situation in Ukraine, and you're doing that in the morning, and you make a decision to not do any more casework the rest of the day, but if you simply turn on the radio or TV or open up a newspaper, you still get exposed to the same horrific content. So that's, it can be really challenging to separate or containerize your investigation.
And Nicole Beckwith.
Go, Micah, go.
All right. So I was going to say that Nicole Beckwith had a really good suggestion. For those of you that are just joining us a little bit late or are listening to our podcast or the recorded version of this, Christina is going to do a great job of putting all of these links in the notes section. So you'll be able to follow along with that stuff. One of the things that Nicole Beckwith brought up was that if you can't reset, you know, move to a separate office, if you're not actually going into work, change your environment within your office so that when you get in there, I think she mentioned she turned over a desk blotter, you know, just a cover for her desk and made it like red when she's doing work and flipped it over to green side when she's not doing work. Changing the environment can change those associations and make sure that when you are doing personal things or just non-work things, some of that work stuff doesn't bleed over.
Yeah, the associations are a very nasty aspect of your cognitive abilities while conducting this work, because you connected with the works, with the clothes you are wearing, the smells. Nicole also mentioned that, smell something different afterwards, change your senses. Anyway, I don't want to give too many spoilers. I think all three resources, Nico's blog, and this one and Nicole's live stream, they will all be in the notes of the video and of our podcast.
Very cool. The next thing that we have is a blog post from our very own team here at OSINT Curious. It's called Find Company Data with a Programmable Search Engine. And it was written by NixIntel, Stephen Harris. Stephen goes into depth about how to use these Google customizable search engines, they used to be called CSEs, customizable search engines or custom search engines. Now they're called programmable search engines. And essentially it is just configuring a Google feature to only search for the things that you want in the sites that you want them to search. It's free with a Google account, and he walks you through step by step how to actually set that up to create your own search engine. And then you decide whether you publish it or whether you use it privately. It's all up to you. I know, Nico, you've used several programmable search engines over the years. I have two. Thoughts on this?
I think it's simply when you have those searches that you do repetitively, it makes sense to set up a programmable search engine because it saves you time. So you don't have to perform that quote unquote Google dork every day or every week. And you just point it to that URL of the PC to get the information that you potentially are looking for. It's just convenient.
Basically, yeah. You semi-automate this while still doing the work manually. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially like you said, Nico, if you have complicated Google searches that you're doing over and over and over again, like every day when you come in, you're looking for site:facebook.com, site:twitter.com, site:instagram.com, site:whatever.com, and then a keyword, you can put that into your programmable search engine. And then all you have to do is type in that keyword. And not only you, but everybody on your team that might be using that, they're all searching the same way, at least for that query, which is that consistency can sometimes be very important to a team when you're doing those. Yeah. Awesome. The next resource is URL Scan. Now, I know a lot of people actually use URL Scan in their work. I thought, you know, it would be really neat to show one of the features that people don't use. If you don't know about urlscan.io, what it does by default, if you just go to the homepage, is it will take a URL that you give it. It will go out to that URL using its servers, and it will analyze, it will grab data from that website that you tell it to search on. And then I'm going to get off that page because I don't want any of our wonderful live streamer listeners and viewers right now to put a Rickroll or something in there that we see. But what it will do is it'll grab that data and then bring it back to you so that you don't have to visit that site. And URL Scan is one of those sites that we've mentioned several times in OSINT Curious and our blog posts and stuff. What I also wanted to show is there's a couple other features that can be kind of fun on the site. For instance, the search feature, which is just the next button over. If we wanted to search for something like, I don't know, CNN.com, I actually mistyped that. That was very fortuitous. I typed in CNNC.com because I fat finger things a lot. And what we find is that people have searched for this fat finger domain. So maybe it was a phishing domain or something. And the benefit here is that this is cached content. I can click on any of these, and I'm hoping that none of this is not safe for work. Here you can see that the CNNC.com website is hosted in China, and it pulls apart some of the data that's associated with it. So here we're leveraging other people's searches from 6 months to 4 years ago on the site. So just like we use archive.org, archive.today, and Google Cache and Yandex Cache, urlscan.io may have cache of web pages that we use as well. Cool. Ms. Licati, tell us about GeoHints.
So you know when you have a picture you're investigating, you want to geolocate it, or you want to have some more context about where this picture was taken, and you see one pretty clear identifier, you feel this is something unique, like a traffic light, like a specific like sidewalk, and you're thinking, yes, this is something unique. But where does this uniqueness exist in the world? You feel like you have the identifier, you don't know how to find where it is. And yes, one option is to run a reverse image search and use this. For example, Yandex has this option to crop a specific area and search according to that little area, but that does not necessarily help you, and it does not necessarily yield relevant results. So for that reason, we have some more manual work you can do. There is this resource called geohints.com. It is a database with different categories of landmarks. So straight, if you go in the homepage, Michael, will go back in the homepage.
Sorry, I'm playing around. Yeah. Going back to the homepage, here we go.
It's this curiosity, yeah?
Yeah.
Micah clicking on stuff all the time, for the listeners just saying. So if you go back in the homepage, you see different categories of, let's say, unique characteristics you could have in a location, like specific architecture, camera gens, the currency of a specific area. Okay, that's a bit more known usually. The driving side, house numbers, how do the plates of house numbers look like? You could have different images of how license plates look like, or the lines of, on the road, the type of nature you see around in a specific area, the sidewalks, the utility poles. How many times did we play GeoGuessr and saw different types of utility poles and we were thinking, yeah, that does not look European, but it does not look American either, and we cannot really tell from the scenery what this area is about.
Yep. So yeah, it would have been really helpful for GeoGuessr.
Yeah.
And Christina, I think this is using Google Street View imagery for the imagery. So if you're all of the things on the homepage here are things that you could find or see in Google Street View imagery. So if you are playing GeoGuessr and you want to get better at it, this is a great site to go. It's like the geotips.net site, but I like it because it organizes the data a little differently. So, you know, if we are looking at light posts, we don't have to go to this country and scroll down to the light post in that country and go to here, all the light posts are together. So it's kind of neat. I like it.
Mm-hmm. And it gives some direction when you need it. Yeah. I feel that it's pretty straightforward and visual website. So you can even scroll very fast through all the options and see what's relevant to you.
Yeah. Looks cool. Yeah.
All right, Christina, tell us about Instagram's new app feature.
So these news came out in July, but we're mentioning it today. Doesn't matter. I was playing around with it. I was researching this a little bit as well. So Instagram's new map feature allows you to type in the search area of Instagram a specific area, a city, for example, let's say New York. You have some options under the search bar that either says top, accounts, blah, blah, blah. You go straight to the site that says places. And once you click on places and you have typed in the search button New York, the whole Instagram will show you a map. And within this map, you can, of course, scroll and go elsewhere, go to a specific site in the city, but you will be presented with all the stories that the Instagram users that have public profiles have posted in that area that day. So you have access to all the live stories. Now, let's talk use cases, because at this point, this is just a fun feature. But what are the use cases? One fun fact is that you can search by event. So if there is a big event, you know how there are those teams that that scout social media and that monitor social media during large events. So you can search by event as well and view all the stories from different users related to that specific event. Is it a conference? Is it a concert? You can go to that area on the map where the conference or concert or demonstration is happening and click on one bubble, because it shows the all event-related stories in one bubble, and see what different people have posted about it. Or if you are investigating something that happened in a specific area that same day, you can go and review people's stories from that area, but I guess you have to be a super fast responder at that point, and see if somebody's camera managed to film a detail that could be useful to your investigation. These are the two use cases that pop up in my head. I don't know if you guys have something else in mind.
Nico?
I recently had a case with that. So I had a high net worth individual that was in a restaurant, or at least posting on their Instagram that they were in a restaurant. And I wanted to figure out who they were with. So I started pointing my Sock Puppet account to that map, hoping that other people were in that same restaurant, live stream thingy, doing things or sharing photos. And luckily, I was able to find people two tables next to the high net worth individual that took a picture and a video that showed me who he was having a diner with. So with that, I was able to figure out maybe, hey, there's a potential merger coming up or something like that. So from a business perspective, that could be some valuable intelligence that you could collect from that.
Did you say merger or murder?
Depends on how the deal went, I guess.
Okay, all right. I heard murder, but then I was like, it's me probably said merger.
Merger,
okay.
Merger.
Merger, yeah. Merger. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah,
but I think Nico is making another valid point, which I forgot to mention. Thank you, Nico, for reminding me. Use a sock puppet account when you review these stories, because of course other people will be able to view the profile you're viewing their stories with. So good OPSEC practice, create a sock puppet account, use a separate online identity when you use social media. I feel like we can never say this enough. And yeah, make sure that just like you are viewing at other people's stories, they will go back and look at your account as well, potentially.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It goes back to that OPSEC stuff, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
But that's a very good case, Nico. Nice.
Yeah, nice. Way to bring that home, buddy. All right. So our next story is actually something that I found out that built into Google Chrome and Chrome-like tools like Chromium, there is this built-in user agent switcher. Now, for us in people that deal with things on the web all the time, this can be a really useful thing, because what we generally do is go to like the Chrome store and or the Firefox add-on place, and we search for user agent switcher, and there's literally a huge number of these in the store, and you don't know which ones to try, which ones are the best. In fact, recently there was one that was malicious and it had to be removed from the stores. So instead of using an add-on or extension, one of the things I found is that you can just go into the developer tools, so Control Shift I on most platforms, and then on Google here, there's a little thing that looks like a Wi-Fi symbol right here in the network tab. So click on network, hit the Wi-Fi thing, and then when you do that, make this a little bit bigger here for us. When you do that, you go to network conditions and you see there's a user agent thing right here. You just uncheck use browser default, and the browser has other user agent strings that it knows about. So if you wanted to pretend to be an Android device instead of your Google Chrome, you can do that. BlackBerry? Yeah, absolutely. And you can see, you can even pretend to be Firefox or other things. Now, you can make your own user agent strings and put that in there. And why would this be important? Well, going back to Instagram, some of the tools that we use, some of the sites that we use, react differently if you have a different user agent string. Sector 035 in his most recent week in review, or week in OSINT, sorry. He mentioned that Instagram was going through some changes and that there was a technique that you can't use anymore because Instagram changed. But if you use the Instagram mobile app's user agent string and put it into this custom user agent field, then guess what? In your Google Chrome, you can still access those resources. It just takes a little bit more time. But I love this because this is built in. We don't have to add extra extensions or add-ons to leverage this tool.
So I don't know if things change, but is it still not capable of showing, let's say, an operating system? Because very often we also want to add in our operating system details within the user agent string. Is that something that we can still manually do now in that manual field? Or
oh, no, you don't have sure. to do that. I'm sorry, I didn't actually, here, let me do this again. We'll do developer tools. We'll get back there to network conditions. When you do this, you can see that here, like Chrome on a Mac.
It's already in there. Yep.
And so it says, hey, this is Mac OS 10.14.6. For those of you that are on the podcast, we can literally just type in Windows 10 or Windows NT 10 or whatever we want. We want to, in those of you that are doing malware analysis or whatever, you can put in there the malware's user agent string to make it look like that. So yeah, Nico, you can customize it. Sorry, it was misleading.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right. So that's one thing. The other thing that I wanted to mention was What's My Name. You know, this is a project near and dear to my heart. This is What's My Name.app, which is the web version of What's My Name. I wanted to bring it up for a couple of reasons. One, this guy, Osint Tactical on Twitter, has done a really amazing job of getting us over 500 search sites on the thing, on the, in the tool. So here, just typing in a username that we want to search for, it will give us, as you see, it's finding 283 users with the name of John across all the sites. Here, because I excluded the pornographic websites, we only have 476. Probably a bad demo. Let me just go ahead and rerun it with the pornographic ones in there. And now we have over 500. So I wanted to say a big thank you to Tactical, Osint. And also, along with that, we've been changing the how the tool works a little bit. So if you are somebody that likes to use things on the command line, as I know a lot of you are, one of the things that we've been doing is changing the checker tool. And I just want to just run that for a second. So I've already downloaded a tool. If you want to know how to download something from GitHub and install it, there's another 10-minute tip out there that we have on our site. But essentially what I'm going to do is I'm just going to show you that I've got the latest tool here. The tool that I'm going to run is the whatsmyname.py. So I'm going to type in my Python 3, what's my name? What's underscore my name.py. And then I can type in a dash H. I always suggest doing this because there's a lot of features here that a man that goes by the name Youper has put into this tool. And those are really, really helpful. So if we come back over here, we can now export in JSON, CSV, or a table format. We can pick things from just a certain category. So like if I wanted to do what's my name, but I only want the social category and I want to output it as a table, I just hit enter here. And Youper's done an amazing job speeding up the tool. Because right now for my virtual machine, it is checking a whole bunch of different sites and looking at stuff. This actually is not working as well as I would want right now. I got to talk to him about fixing it one more time, but it's fast. And after this airs, I'm sure we'll get it working in the.
And also forgot to put in a username to look up. You just gave it only a category.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I was like, wait a second, what's going on? So this actually checked all of the sites. So if I put in the username, let's just put in the word Dutch here. Maybe somebody uses the username Dutch. Thanks, Nico, for showing me how to use my tool. I really appreciate that.
I'll send you a bill later.
Yeah, send me a bill. Here we go. Now that Nico's helped me, this output looks a lot like what ReconNG used to look like. Love it. Yeah. And also there's a CSV output if you want to, you know, put this somewhere else. Or JSON output. So
that's again, some great improvements, man. I think you now went from almost 300 resources to 500 in under a month or something.
It wasn't quite that dramatic, but it was really, really a lot of resources. And this script this script used to take minutes to run. What we've been able to do, what Youper's been able to do is really speed that up as well. So if you like the web app, you got 500 more sites or 500 sites. If you like the Python, you got those sites. Plus you got some speed so you can do things from the command line. So
powerful stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Really powerful stuff.
And very useful.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Moving on. Wanted to highlight some of the other things that we've done in the community and around the internet. And over the last couple of months, we've been lucky enough to be on David Bombal's YouTube video or YouTube channel. David runs cybersecurity, networking, Osint, and other related YouTube videos. He interviews guests and we've been very fortunate to be on there. In the notes of this video, we'll share when I was on the site, when TechNizette, Stephen and I were on the site, and just when Stephen and TechNizette were on the site on his YouTube program, three different videos. I love the editing that they do and just the questions that they have. So if you want to learn more about open source intelligence in a free, engaging way, David Bombal's got some videos for you.
If you haven't had enough of us, but let's also say that the videos contain practical tips and case studies. Yep. And I believe in TechNizette's video, she showcases how she would run certain investigative aspects.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. They are hands-on. They are erring more towards, or leaning more towards, the dramatic, the this is how we find people, this is how we found you, and that kind of stuff. But it's they're fun videos, and they do have tradecraft in them. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And I got to make one about the Untappd drinking app, which, you know, I love doing, right?
Yeah. Drinking or talking about the app?
Both.
Depends.
Yeah.
Depends on the time of day, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's all we've got. Those are all the news stories that we've picked out. Nico, do you have anything else that happened this past month that you're like, I really want to talk about?
Well, I will just drop in a link in our chat here. So that's something that I noticed this morning. So we have a Belgian guy called Inti de Coquelade, and he wrote basically a proof of concept that you can basically track any car using someone's license plate. So in the Netherlands, in Europe, this is a Belgian guy. You can download a Qpark app, for example. You can add in any license plate, and as soon as that car now parks in a Qpark, you will get a notification. So with that, you can track people anywhere. There's one downside. You will need to pay their bill because you are now using their license plate. So as soon as they check out of that parking garage, you will get the bill. So from a stalker perspective, it can be a little bit expensive to stalk someone now.
But from an OPSEC perspective?
I thought from an open source intelligence OPSEC perspective, it was a pretty neat angle to look at open apps that are openly and freely accessible for all of us around the world. And if you are interested in following someone around based upon their license plate, well, technically it can be done. Of course, there are some downsides. There are some technical issues that you may run into, or payment issues, but the perspective, the angle for me was, wow, that's really scary and also impressive. Yeah.
Are scary and impressive.
So, Nico, you also talked in our Discord, you mentioned something about ethics in OSINT. And we've also talked many times about passive versus active techniques. Can you apply some of those things to a technique like this, which would essentially take over that license plate and charge you for it? How would you rate this as passive versus active, and the ethics of it?
So ethics-wise, for me, this would be a no-go unless I was tasked, for example, to keep my country safe from a certain known terrorist from which we knew the license plate of. That would be something different to someone that maybe had some foul language on the internet that needed to be traced down. So ethics-wise, it depends on the risk, I would say. Technique-wise, this would, for me, not be passive reconnaissance. This is actively trying to get information that's not supposed to be open. The fact that sometimes you can find information that's open does not always mean that it was officially meant to be open. And this is why walking that ethics line can be so challenging. Especially if you are not in government, when are you crossing legal borders, in essence? And that is really hard sometimes.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always try to do is think through the entire process. Okay, so I do a technique like this. I get the access to the license plate, but what happens when that person tries to pay for their parking and notices somebody else has claimed their license plate? What would I do if something like that happened? I would like, well, who has it? What's going on? And then, you know, maybe they're able to do something or trace it back. So again, you know, it goes back to operational security, but this would absolutely be like an active measure and not something that I would regularly do. It's interesting from a standpoint of this, of easy access to the data. But as far as like a technique I would do, Not mine.
It's a proof of concept, right? It's just showing you that it's technically possible. Doesn't always mean that things you are technically capable of should be executed 24/7.
Right.
I think we should add that sometimes it is a technique to try to trigger somebody's alarm by thinking or by proving to them that they are being watched so that they will panic and do a wrong move next. Now, this is more of a law enforcement tactic. I wouldn't advise it to OSINT practitioners that are just doing, that are hobbyists or that are doing other types of projects. However, this is something that is happening as well. You want to make your presence known. You want to make the other person feel watched so that they will do a misstep after that.
Yeah, it's my mistake.
Yeah, and
it's a hard debate, right? So I a couple of months ago, I was invited by the Stanley Center, and we had a very large group of people talking about ethics in OSINT. And it's so interesting to see when you have like 20 or 25 industry experts coming from various backgrounds, from universities, from journalism world, from law enforcement, investigative world, and they all have a different take on ethics, particularly when it comes to, let's say, the non-passive OSINT, so asking around, paying for information, that kind of stuff. And it's so hard, since there is no, let's say, real internet law. And let's say if there's an internet law on a global scale, then we have to do it on a micro scale country-wise. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. And maybe, Nico, you can gather some of the outputs from that conference, those talks, and we can include it in this video in the notes section so that our listeners, our viewers can learn more about that.
I'll make sure that we have a link to that paper. Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, Nico.
And there is a comment by Access OSINT, one of our viewers, that says that, yeah, you could potentially pay $30,000 for a New Zealand birth certificate, but then your own name gets put on an access register that the person can view to see you order their birth certificate. I have heard this about different countries, that it is possible to order a birth certificate as long as you get registered as the person who requested it. But
$33.
What did I say? $33. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Just I mean, that would have been expensive. There, yeah.
Inflation.
But this, yeah, inflation.
I think that's a good way of keeping making people accountable. It's like, hey, we'll give you that information, but you got to know that we're going to tell them that you actually asked for it. Of course, if you're law enforcement, you have different ways of getting access to data and to do your investigations and all. But again, you know, this kind of speaks to, in the world of open source intelligence, there's the truly open data, and then there's that open data that you can get access to if you either have funding or you have certain needs, but there may be additional risk that you should look at.
Yeah.
So you always have to look at that and think about that before you request that data. And always think through that process, read up before you and say, yeah, yes, I'll accept these terms or I'll do this, because you never know what's going to happen. Yeah, cool. All right. So, Nico, you've given me those things. I'm going to go ahead and just pop in the bottom one to the comments. We'll add all of these. If you're on YouTube or Twitch, I just put in there the link. If you're on LinkedIn or you're listening to us on podcast, in the notes section of this video on YouTube or on your podcast, we'll have all of the links to these documents. Christina, that is our show today. It's been a been a short but a very full 40 minutes or so.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah. Any last words before we? Oh, Christina, when's our next live stream so people can put it in their calendars?
I believe it is the third Monday of October.
That was the 24th at 11 a.m. Eastern, which is a different time UTC.
Yes, it is. That will be
for me, looking at 5 o'clock UTC, looking at the agenda now.
But is
actually
it, is
5 o'clock CET, 3 o'clock UTC.
Wow. Time zones every time, right?
Well, it's not like time zones, but well, we're going to be doing the time changes in the October, November time frame.
We're into time, yeah.
But it's going to be on YouTube. You can set up a reminder so that you won't miss it and so that you won't get confused with the time zones, because this is a big world. We all live in different times of the day. It's almost evening where I am. Micah, it's morning for you. Other people were telling us good morning in the comments. We live in the future here with Nico.
Well, everybody, I feel like I'm a future guy.
You are very futuristic. Griffin, if you just want to stick on and stay on this live stream, you know, and just wait it out for the next month, just go ahead and do that. Absolutely. It'll be a little bit of dead air, but that's all right. That's all right.
You're not gonna find us in this link, through this link.
No. Well, actually they will, because you can wait on our YouTube. So that's our show. Thank you, everybody, for coming. We really appreciate those of you that have engaged with us on our live stream here. Those of you listening to us on our podcast or watching the video, thank you. Please click the subscribe button, follow us on social media, and as always, we ask you to
stay curious. One day we will get it in sync. Bye, everybody.